Blog Talk Radio.
Did you know there's a secret place to expand your mind? A place to escape the same old negative news? Welcome to Colombo Chronicles Live with Rose Colombo, award-winning author, cable TV and radio host, poet, and advocate for justice. Rose has been seen and heard on local and national TV and radio. She's consulted with victims of injustice for more than 20 years. Her articles have been published in major and local newspapers and magazines. Listen live as Rose Colombo welcomes prominent authors and experts to her podcast every Wednesday from noon to 1 p.m. Pacific Time at blogtalkradio.com/Colombo Chronicles. You can call in and ask questions at 646-564-9742. Follow Rose Colombo every Wednesday from 12 noon to 1 p.m. on Colombo Chronicles Live at blogtalkradio.com/Colombo Chronicles.
Colombo Chronicles Live. Colombo is on their trail. Listen up at Colombo Chronicles Live.
Hi, everyone. Listen up. It's the Rose Colombo. And it's hump day, Wednesday. Getting closer to that weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday for those who are working. Hopefully, everyone will be working soon. Today is September 30th, 2020, and we have a dynamic guest for you, just like we do every Wednesday. But this is a very special guest, just in case you want to write a story for your family, for the public, or just something that you've just always desired to do and don't know how to get started. Well, today you're going to find out from the best expert ever. And this is, of course, the last day of September. Can you believe it? Fall is here, and then we'll be coming into winter and cooler months, and hopefully cooler months. And also, it's important to understand that the country needs to be opened up, because the retailers make all their money for the following year during the holiday season between Thanksgiving and New Year's Day. So it's very, very important that the country open up and put people back to work so they can preserve their businesses, their American dream. And I just wanted to mention that one of the most controversial presidential elections ever in the debate, in the first presidential debate this year, 2020, was absolutely remarkable and stunning. So we're going to talk about that on part two. But now we're going to enter into the world of authors and experts with a dynamic guest. Her name is Judith Briles. She is a well-respected book shepherd and the author of 37 books and over 45 book awards for her publishing and marketing books. She is amazing, and I'll tell you a little more about her in just a few minutes. We're going to take a break, and then we'll come back, and we will enter into the world of authors and experts. So stay with us, and don't touch that dial.
Howdy, folks. Just stopped in by my favorite restaurant, the Horseshoe Cafe. I highly recommend the home-cooked hot meals and piping hot coffee. In fact, it reminds me of my mom's home cooking when I was growing up. The customer service is excellent. Be sure to save room for the world's best desserts. Make sure you try a slice of fresh homemade pie. The Horseshoe Cafe is located at 154 East 4th Street in the heart of Benson, Arizona. The Horseshoe Cafe is right outside of Tombstone, Sierra Vista, and Tucson. Sometimes Patty and Mike stop by to welcome you. The staff at the Horseshoe Cafe looks forward to seeing you. Stop by to eat or relax. Cool down in the desert with a cold beer or your favorite cocktail. That's the Horseshoe Cafe. Oh, and don't tell anyone I told you, but some people think it's haunted. One thing is for sure. Be sure to bring your appetite.
Colombo Chronicles Live. Colombo is on their trail. Listen up at Colombo Chronicles Live.
Hi, everyone. It's the Rose. Yes, listen up, because we have Dr. Judith Briles with us today. She is the award-winning and best-selling author of 37 books, including over 45 book awards for her publishing and marketing books. Author You, Creating and Building Your Author and Book Platforms, Snappy, Sassy, Salty, Wise Words for Authors and Writers, that's you. How to Avoid 101 Book Publishing Blunders, Bloopers, and Boo-Boos. Boy, we all need that. How to Create a $1 Million Speech. Now, that would be very intriguing indeed. But her latest book is When God Says No, Revealing the Yes When Adversity and Loss Are Present. This is going to be very exciting to hear more about that. To date, her books have been translated into 17 countries with over 1 million copies sold. Her books and work have been featured over 1,300 plus radio and TV shows, including repeat appearances on CNN, CNBC, and Oprah. Print publications include Newsweek, People, Time, Wall Street Journal, USA Today, and Surviving the National Enquirer. Based in Colorado, she is the founding partner in The Book Shepherd, a book and publishing consulting and project management firm that works with authors at all stages of their books. Boy, do I need her help to create a book that you will never regret. Her website is thebookshepherd.com, and she's the host of the Author You, Your Guide to Publishing podcast. Judith is with us today, so let's welcome our very special guest, Dr. Judith Briles, and let's say hello. Hi, Judith, how are you?
Hi, Rose, and how are you today?
I'm doing great. The sun is shining, and when the sun is shining, I always feel great.
Oh,
there's
me
some
too.
Energy from the sun.
Yeah, well, I do too. I get it from the sun and the water. And in Colorado, although we have a fall day, we know that winter is right around the corner.
It's so beautiful in Colorado. I was there twice visiting, and it is a beautiful, beautiful state with the greenery and the environment still intact. It's beautiful. It's absolutely beautiful. I've never been there when it snowed, but I can only imagine the white Christmas you're going to experience.
Well, you know, we've had a few that we didn't have the white stuff, but usually it's there. Listen,
so
hopefully
Judith,
like an author's words well in their books.
Yes, and you have an expansive background as a book shepherd. Why don't you tell our audience what is a book shepherd and what reason did you feel was book shepherd needed and a coach for so many people around the world?
Oh, golly, where do we start? Well, let's start with just some numbers. Roughly 80% of the population thinks that there's a book in them. And I've always said, Rose, should it come out? Because some shouldn't, or they need a lot of help in getting out. And I wish that, I mean, there weren't things like coaches like they are today. They weren't book coaches, and they certainly weren't book shepherds when I started writing back in the early 80s. So I kind of stumbled along learning as we go, so to speak. And I really had always reached my hands out to other authors and just saying, here, let me give you some help here. Let me tell you some of the things that I went through to get where I did. And if I think the book looks pretty good, I'll introduce you to my agent and maybe we'll get it sold to New York. All right, that's all changed today. With over 1 million books getting sold, with less than 10,000 coming out from New York, that your odds are really low. And a New York, or a traditional book as they call it, doesn't get the support. Like when I was a newbie on the street, where I was really well kept for. And I mean, they really did take care of all the dotting the I's and crossing the T's and supporting you. That's just not the way it is today. So others have got to learn how to do a lot of this stuff yourself. So for me, where I come in as the book shepherd, I want to deliver practical publishing guidance and advice. And that's going to come from my, you know, 30 plus years out here authoring myself, going through the hiccups and the barriers and climbing out of the potholes that are out there. And it wasn't until 2006 that I formally crossed over and said, you know, I love working with authors. I love working with the new ideas. And I am sick of being on the road all the time. Besides some of the stats, you know, with this 45 plus book awards and 37 books, I've spoken in every state of this country in 22 countries. And
wow.
On my books. And I don't want to do that anymore. It's grueling. But so now people come to me. And if they want to do that, I will cheerlead for them and I will encourage them and I'll help them start on that stepping stone. But now I just like to do the coaching, the rewriting, the bringing the team together. So as a book shepherd, I bring all that team together, the designers, the illustrators, the printers, all that. And then I help guide on the marketing before we turn them loose. And get them out there on their own. And if they do want to speak all over the world like I did, my book, How to Create a $1 Million Speech, will actually be the roadmap for that.
That's fantastic, because there's a lot of people who would have a lot to say, but they need help,
mm-hmm.
they need a coach, they need guidance. And so that's excellent that you put a book together to help people who have a message for the world or for a specific group of people for whatever reason, and just don't know how to get it all put together. So you worked with Lori Golden, and I interviewed Lori Golden on her book, My House of Lies, and it was so intense and such an important topic, at least to me, because I'm an
mm-hmm.
advocate for justice of 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
So I was very I was very intrigued with her book. And so what was the process, because that's an excellent book, what was the process you
yeah.
worked through to move it from words to published book?
Well, Rose, I'm so glad you brought up Lori's book, because I actually just talked to her early this morning and just reiterated, and I'm so proud of that book. Let's start with a title. She didn't have a title. And as I heard Lori's story, I said to her, you know what? You lived in a house of lies. And then I said, oh, my God, that's the title. My House of Lies. She loved it. And we took off from there. So Lori had started on her manuscript. But it needed a lot of help. It needed a lot of rewriting. And one of the things, especially for those of you who are listening who are thinking of writing a memoir, is that when you get so caught up in whether it's trauma, drama, assault, agony, all kinds of things, you know, they become triggers, and it's hard. It's so hard. And one of the things is, even though Lori is a therapist, I had to be the book therapist to help guide her through the pain she was reliving as we did the intensive rewrites together. And what I loved about is when I saw the manuscript and started tinkering in my head, because one of the things that, you know, what was that movie, Rose? The Sixth Sense. The Bruce Willis was in that. And I can't remember the name of the little boy. But he said, remember the line, I see dead people?
Oh, yeah.
That when I talk to people when they're talking to me about their books and I'm starting to look their book over, I see what the book's supposed to look like. And so when I'm actually helping with the rewrites and getting the book in the words, the manuscript into shape, I actually see how this book should roll out in the reader's eyes. And one of the things that we did with Lori was all these flashbacks she kept having and how we juxtaposition them throughout the book as they come out. I could see this is a movie. My House of Lies, mm-hmm. It could be a movie. It could be a horror story, but it's a movie as we transition through that. So that's, for me, a book shepherd is someone who creates that roadmap, that guidance, that everything that goes along and moves someone through it, but also takes it to another level. So we make a big difference in that. So that's what makes it so much fun to have these books work out and transition into a whole another realm that a lot of times the authors just had no idea. And Lori's one of the ones when I talk, she says, I love how my book looks. I love how it feels. I love how it reads. I mean, that's a home run for someone like me.
Oh, absolutely. And it's a home run for Lori as well. And that's so important because it's very difficult to put your pain and suffering into words without all the emotion coming through. And it's very difficult to think, wow, what are people going to think about me when I tell them my story? And how they're going to accept it. And so it's very important to have a third party helping put that together where people can understand it and accept it. And
exactly.
Actually learn from it as well and feel
I feel like
I am not alone. Gee, I'm not the only person this happened to. And here's a survivor, you know,
yes.
Because that's so important to become a survivor.
One of the things is that it's important for my work is I'm non-judgmental. You know,
right.
You know, some of the stories I hear are stunning, just really stunning,
right.
But it works.
Right. And so you also say that there are four key factors in determining if an author should publish with a traditional publisher versus your on your own,
yeah.
Self-publishing, et cetera.
Well,
what are they?
Exactly. And they're first of all, you start with, control. Is it important for you to be in control of your book? You know, to... is it important for you to care what the book looks like, the cover? How about the back design? How about maybe some ideas that you might have? If that's real important that you can express and get across, then the independent self-publishing will be just fine on that. If you don't care, you want someone to make all the decisions and you just don't want to care about it at all, well, then that's not a factor. The next factor is, what about the quality of the book? It's really important for me that the kind of books that we create and what we produce could actually compete with New York. I want the covers to compete with the New York. I don't want anyone to look at my book, any book that I have my fingers on, and said, oh, you can sure tell that one's been self-published. That doesn't work for me. So it's quality important, from the feel of the paper, the feel of the cover, to the design of the cover. And then the next thing is called timing. Well, how important is it for you to get your book out? If I was to, let's say I wrote a really hot book and New York says, boy, we love this idea. And today we're looking at, oh my gosh, Rose, it's the last day of September. We're looking at September. We are talking about a book that will not come out in 2020. It will not be coming out in 2021. You are talking about a book that's going to come out in the year 2022, and most likely not before spring, right? Then the
mm-hmm.
fourth factor is one that all authors are paid attention to, and it's called money. And that once I did the crossover, and my crossover from traditional publishing, 18 of my books were published with New York, and then the last 19 have been under my own imprint. I made my own publishing company. When I saw that I went from making a dollar a book, which, by the way, an author is lucky today to make a dollar a book published from New York, it's going to more likely be between 47 cents and probably 97 cents, that when I went from all of a sudden figuring out how to really sell books, that in the worst case, a $20 book, I would make net $9. If I sold it directly to the bookstore, do the resale, or to an Amazon. Two, speaking in front of people where all of a sudden I get the whole enchilada. I get all $20 and I get it right now today instead of 6 months from now with holdbacks. So once I saw that baby, I never have looked back, Rose. And when people say to me, you know, Judith, well, what if New York came to you and offered you a gazillion dollars? And I say they would have to offer me a gazillion dollars so I could just walk away and not give a twiddly dit what they did with the book. But so those are those four components: quality, control, timing, and money. And also there's this gives a fifth ingredient. Fifth ingredient is that you have to realize that this is a business. You have a profit and loss statement, you have revenues, and you have expenses. And in the very beginning, you're going to have a whole lot more expenses than than you will revenues. Now, the IRS will not have a problem with that. You've got a good 5 years to show that you're actually trying to make a profit, and you're going to have a whole bunch of uploaded expenses that will be, oh my gosh, tax deductible. So that's kind of it in a nutshell for you.
Well, yes, and I think a lot of people don't realize that they have to put money up front when they want to get their book reviewed and edited and published and all this.
Well,
they, I don't think they really know those steps as you just presented to us.
Yes. Okay. And those are the reasons why. But one of the number one reasons why a book does not succeed in any type of an award contest is I'll just put it bluntly, crappy editing or no editing. And then the other thing is why it gets killed in review is crappy editing or no editing. So you can't fake this part. The readers will know.
Yes, so would you say that is one of the secrets to publishing success, is the editing?
Yes.
Do you have another?
No, that is one of them. Editing success. Number two is make sure you have professionals in play. Whoever does your cover design, by golly, this is what they do. This is what I do for a living. I design books and covers and interiors. And then realize that, you know, you mentioned a few of my books. My book, How to Avoid 101 Book Publishing Blunders, Bloopers, and Boo-Boos. Well, be a fabulous guide, and yes, there's 101 of them, to help them from screwing up, from making mistakes. It's something that sure wasn't out there when I started on this path a gazillion years ago, when my first book came out in June 1981. So we're talking a long time ago in that area. So that book is going to be very helpful. And the other book that would be very helpful would be Author You, Creating Your Author and Book Platforms, which just really creates the infrastructure. It's a workbook, but the infrastructure of really, you know, understanding what you need to know. And then the third, I'm going to give you, besides books, the third really necessary ingredient besides, you know, we have editing, we have professional designers, people, you know, like myself who really understand the book business. But the third thing is you better understand marketing. And a lot of you are going to say, but no, I just want to write. I don't want to market my book. Why? Oh, Judith, let's hire you. You can market my book. No, I'm not going to be hired to do that for you. Do I know how to market your book? Yeah, I do, but that's not what I want to do. That you've got to learn marketing, and that it can be fun, but that's where you've got to get out there. That really, then, the truth is 10% of a book success is having a decent book. 90% is the marketing.
Yes, like all products, it's a product, and you need to get out there and market your product if you love your product and have passion for it. And that's what,
yes.
You know, I mean, I can't imagine people paying all this money to have a professional book and then not having the passion and the desire to go out and market it.
Because customers don't come to you.
Yeah, so that's important. It's crucial. It's one of the essential ingredients. I had a client. These twosome had created this wonderful book. I mean, it was truly one of my favorite. I bought 24 to give away as gifts. And that I can't remember the exact title, but it's what to say, what to do, how to act when a crisis happens. And it could be, you know, a tragedy in your hometown, whether it's a fire, a shooting, fill in the blank, something horrible happens to a community or just a family. What can you do? What can you say? How can you help? And they would not do that next mile is to stretch out. Every time I would see something awful happening in the Colorado community, I would reach out to Barb and I said, oh my gosh, contact this radio station and say this. I mean, I was marketing for them. And they would not make a phone call. Or if you were in my life, I could say, you need to contact Rose and tell her about this countrywide fiasco that's going on. She would love to hear 5 tips that her listeners could hear that could make a difference in someone's life. Wouldn't you, Rose?
Absolutely. That's what I do. Absolutely.
That's what you do. And so
yes,
well.
Yes, and it's a passion, you know, and I like helping people. I like providing them with information and knowledge on how to get through life and be motivated and survive no matter what happens to us. We got to pick ourselves up, even if it's about a book, and a book can bring you money if you work it right and market it and contact Dr. Judy Briles as well. And so why don't you tell us a little bit? I know we're running out of time here. So why don't you tell us a little bit about When God Says No? What is that about? Your latest book.
Well, when God Says No is actually when I finished writing the manuscript that my book designer, she went through it. She said, and here's something to reveal to all our listeners, that book designers don't read your book. They always think everyone's going to read my book. No, they don't. They design it. You're supposed to have it all ready to go, and we will design how it will look as a book. And Rebecca Finkel was the designer for When God Says No. And she came back. She said, are you sure, Judith, are you sure you want to reveal all this about you? And I said to her, Rebecca, I'm 70 years old. It just doesn't matter anymore. So I said, let it go. And then actually when I was done, I said, oh, there's one more chapter. I need to add this one more chapter in there, which was about my oldest daughter, and who, you know, I had her read it because she's all over it. But that When God Says No opens on the death of my 19-year-old, and I later reveal I had a baby also die. And it really deals with, it's not a religious book, but it's a spirituality, and certainly I do use some scripture in it. And faith was an important factor. But it's a book about overcoming adversity and loss. And it's also, it reaffirms that what could be a loss that I'm grieving over, and I'm talking about things outside of a death of a child. It could be a death of a job. It could be a death of a promise and a wish and a dream that you have that just isn't going to happen. That, you know, that's kind of an adversity. It's a loss for you. So
exactly.
It deals with, you know, those things of what happens when your deck of cards goes kaput. And so I take you through a huge series of revelations of chapters, and I have a very mercurial life, and it's been very up and down. But if you ask me what my life is like, I have a great life. I have a great life, and I always compare it to a rose, fabulous colors, amazing fragrances, and just some horrendous thorns that I've hit along the way. And so has everyone else. So my heart book. I did a variation of it 20 years ago. Frank died in 1983, and it took me 5 years to write that little book. And I was away on vacation, and I ripped it apart, threw away originally. I threw away 100 of them. I kept the opening story of how I felt when my youngest daughter was at the foot of my bed, and boy, I felt her presence, and I leaped out of the bed and I grabbed her wrist and I said, "What do you mean Frank is in the morgue?" Rose, I have no idea why that came out, but it did. And she just said, "Mom, no, come." And she pulled my hand, and out in the front room were two cops, and Frank was dead. But so I take, that's the opening, and then I take you through the rest of my life and how I overcome all the pitfalls I ran through.
That's a very, very important book. I believe that Human Interest are very important books, because people experience these things themselves, but they always think they're alone and there's no other person that understands them, when there are millions of people who are silent and never write their stories or never tell their stories. They keep it inside. So I'm glad that you did that. And so I know you do workshops that are called mm-hmm. Book Publishing Unplugged, Book Marketing Unplugged,
they're
and Speaking
horrible.
Unplugged.
Yeah.
So what are they? How do people know about your workshops? Are they online?
They are online. Those are intensive. So when we do them, they're in person. COVID, of course, canceled everything this year. But we're kind of hopeful. I've got it on my calendar to do the live, the Speaking Unplugged workshop, March, I think it's the 19th and 20th. It's a Friday, Saturday. I always hold them in Denver, and I do them every quarter. So I do the speaking, and then I follow with the book publishing, and then I do the book marketing. And the new one we're adding on this year is the social media, which actually follows it. It's a critical part of book marketing. But we do those. But I also do webinars monthly. I have a blog every Tuesday, live, new, always new. I have you mentioned my podcast, the Author User Guide to Book Publishing. That's 5 years old, and that goes out on Thursdays. I have an e-zine every Wednesday, and I do a Twitter blog, my favorite 10 Twitter tweets and why, on a Saturday. So website, thebookshepherd.com. And it's explore it. But first of all, if you have any interest, those of you who are listening, of being featured on a fabulous show like Rose's, for heaven's sake, sign up for all my tips on how to work with the media. It's right there on the homepage. And you will get a whole series of things on what to do, how to reach out, how to pitch yourself right there. And then once you sign up, you'll become a pen pal with me, and I will start giving you information. And also, I'll just say to your listeners, if they want to talk, for heaven's sakes, call me. And my phone number is right there on the homepage, and let's just chat and brainstorm how we can get your book to the next step and alive and out there, just like we did with Lori Golden.
That's fantastic, and that's fantastic information. And so, unfortunately, we've run out of time, but I want you to let our audience know where can they buy your books.
Oh, well, you can always, I always like to say, let's start with your favorite bookstore and let's support them. So they can order books through their bookstore, because the odds are of them restocking any of the books is not going to happen. Go to my website. If you want a personalized copy, and just click on the tab that says store, they're all right there. Or you can go to the big A in the sky, Amazon, and you can put in my name, Judith, and just B-R-I-L-E-S, and you'll see a slew of them up, and you can order them through there.
That's fantastic, and I really want to thank you for the invaluable information you provided for our audience and all those new authors coming up and writers, and even if it's for their personal desire and passion for years and years. You're never too old, you're never too young to start writing, and so I really encourage you to go to Dr. Judith Briles' website, and even call her, as she said, and get more information, because, you know, she's going to provide you with knowledge, information, and educate you on how to start taking those steps. And she's the book shepherd, and that's what she's all about, besides being a best-selling author around the world. That is fantastic, Dr. Judith Briles. And God bless you, and I hope to talk to you soon.
Oh, it would be my pleasure, and thank you, Rose. And, you know, I just say my most recent client with her book, she was not a youngster. She was 89 years old. Her first book just got published.
Isn't that fantastic? Because, you know, in America, we dismiss seniors and elderly, but they have a world of wisdom and experience and wealth in their lives that they should leave behind for future generations. That's always been my opinion. And I'm glad you brought that up.
Yes. Oh, she's wonderful. And you know what the title of her book is? What Are You Doing the Rest of Your Life? Now, isn't that not cool from an 89-year-old?
I love it. I love it. I love it. Because I'm a believer that age is a number. It doesn't matter. Just age is a number. And don't think about age. Think about what you are going to do for the rest of your life.
Exactly. Your next adventure. All right. Thank you so much, Rose.
You're so welcome, and you have a blessed day, and we'll talk to you soon, Judith. Bye-bye.
All right. You take care, too. Bye-bye.
Bye. And Dr. Judith Briles has left the building, and you definitely want to go to her website, want to check out her books and purchase them, because if you really want to know how to get your book looking professional, and the cover is so important. I can't tell you how important the cover is for marketing purposes and for people to pick up that book or see it online and want to purchase it, as well as the title. She can help you with all of that. And so just visit her and call her. And remember, if we don't tell our stories while we're alive, they'll never be told. So just remember that. You can take 1 hour a day and write a page. If you took 1 hour per day and wrote one page, whether it's on your lunch hour, especially now with COVID, with everybody at home, and from your busy schedule, and you just wrote one page a day, in 1 year, you would have 365 pages. So on that note, we're going to leave the world of authors and experts, and we're going to come back, and we're going to talk about the issues of the day. So don't touch that dial.
Howdy, folks. Just stopped in by my favorite restaurant, the Horseshoe Cafe. I highly recommend the home-cooked hot meals and piping hot coffee. In fact, it reminds me of my mom's home cooking when I was growing up. The customer service is excellent. Be sure to save room for the world's best desserts. Make sure you try a slice of fresh homemade pie. The Horseshoe Cafe is located at 154 East 4th Street in the heart of Benson, Arizona. The Horseshoe Cafe is right outside of Tombstone, Sierra Vista, and Tucson. Sometimes Patty and Mike stop by to welcome you. The staff at the Horseshoe Cafe looks forward to seeing you. Stop by to eat or relax. Cool down in the desert with a cold beer or your favorite cocktail. That's the Horseshoe Cafe. Oh, and don't tell anyone I told you, but some people think it's haunted. One thing is for sure. Be sure to bring your appetite.
That's right. Be sure to bring your appetite to the Horseshoe Cafe. And be sure to say hello to Patty. And now we're going to enter into the world of authors and experts. You're listening to The Rose Colombo on Colombo Chronicles Live radio podcast every Wednesday from 12 noon to 1 p.m. Most shows are archived. You can come back and check out your favorite author and expert and listen to that particular information that you are seeking or seeking more information about by these experts and professionals from around the nation, sometimes from around the world. And also, you can go to my blog site,
Some of the radio shows are listed there, as well as my blogs, which are at Rose for Justice. That's the number 4, roseforjustice.com. Now, and go to Amazon.com and you can read a political satire. It's entitled Obamacare, Dinosaurs, Rednecks, and Radicals. It is about a fictional character named Obamasaurus. It's an Orwellian fictional story on the redistribution of wealth. And at the end, you will wonder, were the dinosaurs made extinct or were the dinosaurs depopulated? Well, Conservative Review says Fox News host Chris Wallace, a registered Democrat, faced intense backlash on Tuesday night for what was widely deemed as bias in the debate in favor of Democrat Joe Biden and against Republican President Donald Trump. One of the issues that Wallace was called out for the most was how he appeared to let Biden interrupt Trump. In fact, he let Biden interrupt Trump many times, but he shut down President Trump when he tried to defend himself, even when Biden called him basically a liar about a particular issue. So Chris Wallace interrupted Biden 15 times, and Chris Wallace interrupted President Trump 76 times. Can't get very many words in when you are interrupted 76 times and can't even answer the question. But Biden was just rambling on, and he could say whatever he wanted. The question was he, did he wear a wire? Because there are photos of what appeared to be a wire outside of his jacket, and he slipped his hand underneath his jacket like he was pushing something back under his coat. So I think they should have an independent moderator who is not a Republican or a Democrat moderating. And I also believe that they should have a timer so that when the 2 minutes is up, it's up, and that each guest debater, the incumbent and the president of the United States, is silent while the other person speaks, despite how difficult it is to listen to information or false or true information or facts that may or may not be factual. It is very difficult to listen to that, but it's important to listen before reacting. It's like being in the courtroom, and you must sit there and shut up and sit down and be quiet, or else you could be in contempt of court. And the judge will interrupt you if you open your mouth and threaten you, and with contempt of court if you do it again. So you are to remain silent no matter what a witness or a opposing attorney is saying about you, even if it's a pack of lies. You must wait your turn to defend yourself. But if you have a biased judge, you probably won't get to defend yourself or open your mouth, because I have experienced that, and millions of people have experienced that. And if you do open your mouth to defend yourself, sometimes they say, "This is my court," and they pound the gavel down, and "I will hold you in contempt if you open your mouth again." Well, that's kind of like what we experienced last night in the first presidential debate. The only thing that was missing that Chris Wallace didn't have it to use was the gavel. At his disposal was the gavel. So that is my opinion of what they need to do. They need to have timers, and people need to listen to the other person just as if you're in a courtroom. Control yourself, listen, no matter if it's lies, and have the opportunity by a fair, objective moderator to respond to what the other person stated, and not become
a part of the debate or make statements that could be totally misleading rather than asking a question. So this is why people are upset about the first presidential debate. So one of the issues that Wallace was called out for the most was how he appeared to let Biden interrupt Trump, but it didn't appear he did. We witnessed it. We saw it. It was not our imagination. But would jump in to interrupt Trump 76 times when Trump would talk over Biden, and he only interrupted Biden 15 times. Fox News host Brian Kinnead even noted the discrepancy and called it out on social media, writing, "Why is Joe Biden allowed to interrupt? Trump is not." And then there was Andy McCarthy, who tweeted, "I love Chris Wallace, but he should get out of the way." And Andy McCarthy, "Biden doesn't support the Green New Deal." Oh, Wallace got that out of him. No, Trump did. Oh, well, did Wallace clarify what parts of Green New Deal Biden is against? No, needed to move on. And Stephen L. Miller, "Wallace laughing along with Biden isn't a good look." Gutfield, "That was not good." Bill O'Reilly tuned in and tweeted, "Good line from Trump. He tells Chris Wallace he's debating him, not Joe." It was as if they should have put a boxing ring on stage, and then they should have had boxing gloves on, including Chris Wallace, who was the surprise boxer who jumped in the ring with Biden to start punching against the president of the United States, and Biden calling him out as basically a liar at one point, a clown at another point, and told him to shut up, man. He showed no respect for the president of the United States of America on the world stage and did not refer to him as Mr. President, which has never happened in U.S. history. And Chris Wallace did not refer to President Trump but one time as Mr. President, but he referred to Joe Biden many times as Vice President Joe Biden. He is not the vice president. Mike Pence is the vice president. And then there's the problem of why vice president or former vice president Joe Biden chose Kamala Harris to be his running mate when she is not a natural born American, because Joe Biden, according to Jill Biden, has had 3 strokes and he loses focus from time to time with his words. So if that's the issue, why is he running for president of the United States if he is vulnerable to forgetfulness, losing focus, and has had 3 strokes, when we need a president who is in excellent health, which the Democrats kept touting President Trump that he needed to produce his medical records because they didn't believe he was mentally or physically able to be the president of the United States. So we have a situation here where we need an independent moderator. We need a timer that alerts the president of the United States, Donald Trump, and the former vice president that time is up. You've had your 2 minutes. Now be silent and let the other person respond so the American people can hear what they have to say. Otherwise, put on your boxing gloves, get in the ring, and it's a 2-to-1 punch. So Rocky was the only one I was expecting to show up next. So then we have the problem of voter harvesting and paying postal workers to dump mail-in votes and to steal ballots out of mailboxes and to send two or three ballots to specific Americans. Why do they need two or three ballots? And then we have this problem here. Representative Ilhan Omar linked to cash for ballot voter fraud, a voter fraud scheme, which is in Minneapolis. U.S. Representative Ilhan Omar, Democrat, who has been linked to a massive illegal vote buying scheme in an elderly community in her heavily Somali district in Minneapolis. The illegal ballot harvesting operation is just the latest in a growing list of federal crimes, and self-avowed Democratic socialist is alleged to have committed in recent years, including marrying her brother to commit immigration fraud and student loan fraud, and also, I want to add, bigamy, incest, and adultery, and homewrecker against a wife with a minor child, breaking up their marriage, and committing adultery, and then marrying the businessman, and then allegedly funneling $600,000 to him, to his business. So where is the FBI and where is the Department of Justice and where is their investigation into this long laundry list of allegations that anyone else would have been removed from Congress? We've had many, many congressional members removed from Congress for committing adultery once or for sexual harassment accusations. This is way beyond anything that any member of Congress has done and been allowed to remain in office for 4 years and then run again without any charges filed to remove her from Congress or even deport her. Project Veritas investigators traveled to Minneapolis to see what they could discover regarding the alleged Somali vote harvesting scheme. U.S. Congresswoman Ilhan Omar, also affectionately known as a member of the squad, and her campaign may be behind one of the biggest voter fraud schemes in American history. Remember, Omar said that she wants to see the American system dismantled. But this time, we have it on tape, said Project Veritas founder James O'Keefe. And this is reported on the TennesseeStar.com. According to investigative journalist David Steinberg, rumors have swirled for years that Ilhan's campaign team operated an elaborate system to purchase thousands of votes from seniors when she ran for office in 2016 and 2018. Those allegations have been forwarded to the FBI. So where's the FBI? Where's the Department of Justice? Why is she getting a pass like Hillary Rodham Clinton got a pass? In the first video in the Project Veritas series, Minneapolis ballot harvester Liban Mohammed can be seen bragging that it takes serious money to run a successful vote harvesting operation. This is a fraud on the American people if found guilty by the FBI or Department of Justice. This is a fraud on the entire nation. It is a fraud against the President of the United States. And it is treason because they are diverting votes and stealing votes from the American people to take down our nation and take down the Republican Party. That's my analysis and opinion. Numbers don't lie. Numbers don't lie. You can see my car is full, he said. All these are absentee ballots. Can't you see? Look at all these. My car is full. All these are for Jamal Osman. We got 300 today for Jamal Osman only, Mohammed said in a series of Snapchat videos posted July 1st and July 2nd on his own Snapchat profile. Osman won a provisional seat on the Minneapolis City Council in a special election, beating 10 other candidates, Project Veritas noted. I'd like to know if those 10 other candidates were American, natural-born American citizens or generational naturalized Americans, as they appear to be fill all the seats in Minneapolis, public seats for public office in Minneapolis with Muslims. Because in a speech caught on camera with former Representative Ellison and Representative Rashida Tlaib, they were speaking at the Muslim Brotherhood Care Organization secret meetings, and she was caught on camera stating that her goal or their goal is to replace Congress with all Muslims. And so that is conspiracy and a coup to remove natural-born Americans and loyal, patriotic, naturalized Americans from office, such as the President of the United States of America. So how can Kamala Harris be the vice president? Because the vice president, in case something happens to the President of the United States, should he win, which would be Joe Biden, perhaps, God forbid, have another stroke or unable age and health to continue on, become the President of the United States and be sworn in, because she is not eligible under the United States Constitution, because she is not a natural-born American, to be sworn into the office of the President of the United States. So why would Joe Biden choose her? And it appears that that needs to be amended. The requirement to be a vice president should also be a natural-born American, born on U.S. soil, a baby born on U.S. soil to two legal Americans in the USA or on U.S. protected territory if they are in the military. Very, very important to amend the Constitution to include that a vice president must be a natural-born American to be sworn in as the vice president of the United States, based on the fact if they needed to step into the Oval Office and they were not a natural-born American, they would not be eligible to be sworn in as the president of the United States. So where would that leave us? It will leave us with the change and transformation that these foreigners are seeking to steal our land, our homeland. And one of the ways they are doing it is by voter fraud. With the help of the Democrat Party implementing this under the Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, and Senior Senator Chuck Schumer, and the candidate for Vice President, for President of the United States, former Vice President Joe Biden, who are turning a blind eye to what is happening to our general elections, and all the liberal judges who are okay with changing the general elections of a state. date of the general election, the final date to vote of a general election of the United States. There is no need to extend it for 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 days. No need at all. You can solicit a ballot and you can deliver it to the ballot box. You can deliver it to the polling place, or you can stand in line and vote. What is the difference between 2020 and all the years prior to November 3rd, 2020 elections? So that's all we have time for. God bless you. God bless America. God bless the President of the United States. And let's push the moderator for the second and third debates. And let's push for people to go to the polls and vote in person. So important because of all the voter fraud that is happening by mainly the left.
Rose Colombo is signing off, and she's left the building. Be sure to bookmark and share Colombo Chronicles Live every Wednesday from 8 to 9 p.m. on the West Coast. Or if you're sleepless in the big city, that would be 11 to midnight on the East Coast. Rose Colombo says, remember, you're never alone when you tune in every Wednesday to Colombo Chronicles.